offering a most loving pranams at Bhagwan's lotus feet. Dear listeners, we welcome you to this week's afternoon satsang. We have indeed a very, very important topic. We're going to continue with the Navaveda Bhakti series. We spoke about Shravanam, we spoke about Kirtanam. It's time for the next path. And like we mentioned before, there is a lot of overlapping between each of these paths. So I think it'll be a very interesting topic, and this is definitely one of the topics which is very, very, very dear to Swami. We will see why it is so important. But before we begin all that, I, as always, invite Arvind to join us all in this satsang, which is definitely two of us speaking, but a lot more of us thinking together. So, Sairam, Arvind.
Sairam, Prem, and as you rightly said, this is one of the paths or one of the modes which is closest to not only Swami's heart, but to many of our hearts, because it appears like to be the easiest one. And not only does it appear to be the easiest one, theoretically it is the easiest one, because that is what Swami has said. The path, the third path, which is Vishnu Smaranam in the Navaveda Bhakti, which starts off with Shravanam, then is Kirtanam, the third is Vishnu Smaranam. So we are in the third path today. And as we say during each and every of this Navaveda Bhakti session, that the nine modes can be looked at as nine different paths, or can also be looked at as nine steps, each one higher than the other.
Right.
When we consider them, you know, when we consider them in their ultimate sense, in the absolute sense, it all boils down to all of them being the same thing, being called by different names. Just like water is called Niru, Pani, Tanni, in different languages around the world. But it's the same water that is being denoted. When we go to the absolute basic, not basic, I mean, in their absolute sense, if we go through each of these nine things, we will realize that all these nine, Shravanam, Kirtanam, Vishnu Smaranam, Padasevanam, Vandanam, Archanam, Dasyam, Sneham, Atmanivedanam, all of them are nothing but different perspectives and ways to call the same thing. But since we are not at that level where we are able to see the oneness of everything, when we see at a superficial level, it will appear to be like a hierarchy. We saw how Shravanam, you know, when we speak about all being equal, we saw how Shravanam is not just about listening, it's about the vibes, it's about vibrations. That is what we concluded towards the end. Kirtanam, we saw, is not just about singing God's name, but it's about being grateful to God every moment of our life. Those are the beautiful conclusions that Swami made us come at, arrive at, during the course of our previous satsang sessions. But that is the ultimate sense. But in the beginning sense, when we see Shravanam look like a very easy thing, because you can just hear God's glory by mistake also, you're just walking by, you hear. Kirtanam requires a little more effort. In that sense, when we come to Vishnu Smaranam, it requires a little more effort than Kirtanam, because, you know, you can hear without thinking. And I'm sure all of us have had examples where people, or we ourselves at times, speak without thinking. But I think it's difficult to think without thinking, you know. Because think means you are thinking. So that is how it is. Hearing without thinking or speaking is possible. When you speak, it's tough not to hear. So when you speak, automatically you are hearing. When you are doing Kirtanam, Sharanam automatically happens. But you can have Kirtanam without Smaranam. And not an ideal form of Kirtanam, of course. But definitely there are chances of it happening. But Smaranam is that, therefore, a step deeper, where you are constantly thinking, because, as I said, you can hear without thinking, you can speak without thinking, but you can't think without thinking. And therefore, at a basic level, when we see, at a superficial level, when we see, it definitely appears like one step higher than Shravanam and Kirtanam, which is, that is Vishnu Smaranam.
In some ways, if you look at it, it kind of, when we spoke about Shravanam, when we spoke about Kirtanam, In many ways we hinted that Shravanam is special because it makes you think of God. You know, Kirtanam is good because even when you are not, in a situation to think of and take the name of the Lord, when doing it in a group, it allows you to make you think of God. But in many ways we said that these two paths are special because it makes you do Smaranam. So we are coming to Smaranam, which is like, you know, this is what it was meant to lead you to. So that way, if you look at it, that is why it is very, very special, Vishnu Smaranam, Namasmaranam, whatever you call it. In fact, we will try to look at it at why it is called Vishnu Smaranam. You know, why not Shankara Smaranam? Why not, you know, Brahma Smaranam or whatever it is? There's probably inner message in why in the Navaveda Bhakti it is called Vishnu Smaranam. But before we come to that, probably we'll listen to why we said this path is so dear to Swami. And this is definitely, if we go by what Swami has instructed devotees, what Swami has given instructions to the organization as such, when he spoke to Sevadal, when he spoke to people, why Swami emphasized so much on Namasmarana, and Namasmarana becomes one of the pillars of Swami's message itself. Probably we'll listen to a small discourse. This is from a clip from a discourse which was delivered in 1996 July, during those marathon discourse sessions when Swami gave a lot of discourses. This was one of the discourses.
Do we have a date? No.
Right, this is 12th of July 1996.
12th of July 96.
Right.
Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Hare Rama Iva Kevalam.
Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Hare Rama Iva Kevalam.
Dine Kali Yugamlo Pradhanamaitundi.
This is important in this age of Kali.
Ee Namasmarana Manam Chestunte Deenikante Goppadainatundi Medicine Marokati Ledu.
There is no other greater medicine other than this singing the glory of God.
Kanuka manam namasmaranam cheyali.
Let us do bhajan.
Ee naamam chetane mana yokka shantamu, mana yokka dourbhagyamu kontha varaku nu anachipetti shantani pempondinchi aanandanni chekurustundi.
By chanting his glory, we'll reach the state of bliss. We'll be in this peaceful state.
Kanukane ee kaliyugamlo manaku emiti undadi goppa shakti.
What is the mighty power in Kali?
Nasti nasti mahabhagam kalikala samam yugam. Nasti nasti mahabhagam kalikala samam yugam. Ee kalikalam lopala denikante goppadi edi ledu 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 ledu. Harer nama, harer nama, harer nama iva kevalam. Ah, namasmarane manaku deeniki taginatundi mandu.
In this age of Kali, there is no greater medicine other than namasmarana.
Krutayuga dhyanam.
Meditation krutayuga.
Krutayuga dhyanam.
Meditation.
Tretayuga yajnam.
In Tretayuga
archanam.
Dwapara
namasmarana.
And Kali age bhajan namasmarana.
Yanta sulabhamaina margam.
What an easy path it is.
Kruta Tretayuga dwapara yugamla kante kudanu. Kali yuga chala sukshmaina margam.
The Kali age has suggested an easier path.
Yanta sukshmaina margani kudanu manamu avalambinchalekapothunnamu.
We don't follow that simple easy path.
Anusarinchalekapothunnamu.
We are not able to follow it.
Oka rendu nimishalaina manam sthiranga kurcholekapothunnamu.
We are not able to.
Ee vidhanga tapas cheyagalra vidu.
We are not able to stick steady even for 2 minutes.
It is sadhyam kaadu.
Well, you don't.
Kanukane oka namasmaranam chestuntu raavali.
It's enough if we sing the bhajan.
So that was Swami speaking there on namasmarana, and we've heard that many times from Swami. You know, in for this Kali Yuga, the best sadhana is namasmarana. And Swami was quoting there from the works of Vyasa. Interestingly, because in the Bhagavatam, there is actually the first insight into how the Kali Yuga would be. There's a huge description of how the Kali Yuga will be, and it's really, really scary. And it's not scary for us, because when we read it, we can relate to that in many, many ways. But in those days, coming from the time of Ramarajya and coming from the time of Krishna's, even now when we see probably a Mahabharata serial, I remember once when we were seeing it with a friend, he said, "No, I can't even imagine a time when, you know, people are speaking so cordially to each other. You know, can I sit? Can I come in?" And, you know, that sort of a thing. Where even when you're showing dissent, you have to do it respectfully. You know, there was a scene where, I think Duryodhana leaves the presence of the elders without telling them, without seeking their permission to leave. And that is looked up as a big offense. And I think that we do it every day. You know, we walk away from, we have a fight with the parents, we slam the door on them and things like that. That time that was considered to be one of the most gross disrespect to be shown to elders. You know, coming from that time with a description of Kali Yuga like this, you know, was a very, very gory description of the time to come. So people go and ask Vyasa, you know, in such a time, how do we protect ourselves? What will the world be like? And that is when actually Vyasa sings this verse, which Swami so beautifully sang. The meaning of that verse is this, you know, how fortunate are those destined to be born in the Kali Yuga. It is so easy to win the grace of the Lord by Namasmarana in the Kali Yuga. You know, instead of telling them that don't worry, he says it's so fortunate to be born in Kali Yuga because the path has been made so simple by making Namasmarana as the only requisite to reach your goal.
Wow. I don't think we need any more, if you say, marketing of Namasmarana, because it's not only in this discourse, several discourses, you know, Swami keeps harping on Namasmarana. I even remember there were one or two plays and dramas put up in Bhagwan's presence, which was something like Hari Namasmarana Kali Yuga Sadhana, or Sai Namasmarana is Kali Yuga Sadhana. This is the best sadhana for the age, Namasmarana. And Swami also beautifully mentioned how for Satya Yuga, it was Yagnas, and then as it changed to Dwapar Yuga, as it changed to Treta Yuga, it changed, then to Dwapar Yuga, it became Dhyanam, Yagnam, Archanam and Namasmarana. Dhyanam for the toughest one, that is meditation, was for the Satya Yuga.
And a very valid point Swami was making there, you know, this is the age of restlessness. Swami said, you're not able to sit for 2 minutes silently, how can you do tapas, how can you do dhyanam?
Correct. Even if you intend to do that, you have to possibly pass through these stages and then only go higher. You know, as I was listening to that, I felt, you know, twice in that clip itself, the translator, that is Professor Anil Kumar sir, he translated Smarana as singing bhajans. So it looks like, you know, isn't that an overlap? Are we doing kirtanam or namasmarana here? So possibly at a superficial level, see, again, whenever we are talking of distinguishing between these, dear listeners, this is the thing, it's always at a superficial level only. Because as we said, at the ultimate level, all these are same. It's just like different names given to water. So at a superficial level, possibly that is why Namasmarana is one step higher than Kirtanam, because Kirtanam is also a subset of Smaranam. Kirtanam is one way of Namasmarana possibly. Right. But Namasmarana cannot be completely described by Kirtanam alone. And so, well, that is another point to show how Namasmarana becomes the next step. Right. So, I think having discussed that, we can possibly say, like, you know, how Swami says, the end of science is the beginning of spirituality. In that sense, if we look, the ultimate goal of Kirtanam is to ensure that whenever we sing God's glory, of course, we concluded that Kirtanam Satsang with the thought that every moment of our life we are grateful to God. We are grateful to God for whatever that's happening, good or bad, happy or sad. And that is true Kirtanam. Actually, if you see, that is the pinnacle of Kirtanam, but that is how we define Smaranam. We are thinking of God every moment. Sarvada, Sarva Kaleshu, Sarvata Hari Chintana. So, therefore, I think we can possibly say that the end of Kirtanam is the beginning of Vishnu Smaranam.
In many ways, if you look at it, when Swami gives a definition for a term, like for instance, if you take the term Brahmachari. Right. No, Brahmachari is supposed to be one of the stages in life. You know, Grihastha, Brahmacharya and things like that. So it is only one stage, it's a subset, but the definition which Swami gives, Swami will say the one who is constantly
seeking
and moving around in the thought of Brahman. Not even seeking. Brahma Acharana,
who dwells
constantly. So that seems to be like the goal of the entire four stages. But that is the meaning of this one stage itself. So I feel in many ways, this Navaveda Bhakti is, physically if you look at it, they are different paths, they can even be gradated, but when you take each one and go into the essence, each one essentially is, you know, practice in its best form will actually lead you to the ultimate. It's the same thing with each one, I mean, we've seen it with Shravanam and Kirtanam itself. Coming to Namasmarana and how it can be different. You know,
just if I can just add on to what you said, it's just like the analogy Swami says, all are one, my dear son, be like to everyone. Everything is the same. That is true, but now when you look at a superficial level, at a physical level, at a level that we are at when we speak, we definitely say that, you know, all you may say whatever, but elephant is definitely bigger than man, or a mouse is smaller than man. not only at such a gross level, even at a little deeper level, we still say a human life is more important than an animal life. An animal life is more important than a plant life. We have our own reasons and different explanations for the same. But all these are far away from the ultimate reality, which in which everything is one and the same. But still, depending on our level of existence, we find these differences. As I said, at a very gross level, elephant is bigger than man. But if you go a little deeper, we say, no, man is bigger than, man is greater than the elephant. Both statements are true, but there are different levels. At the ultimate level, you know, man and elephant are one. So I think once we reach the level of man and elephant are one, then there is no meaning in either having a radio satsang or listening to a radio satsang. So I think we can safely exclude such listeners and speakers because they don't need the satsang. It's not like they don't need it,
Swami makes this statement in one of his discourses. I feel it's very, very profound, especially when you speak of Advaita, the amount of confusion that it can bring. Swami makes it very clear that there can never be Vishaya Advaita, that's the word Swami uses. I hope I'm quoting Swami correctly. There can be no unity in materials. There will always be difference when you see in the physical level. Swami said there can be only Bhava Advaita. Advaita, the feeling of oneness, can only be in feeling and perception. When you look at it grossly, there will be differences. And that's why, even if each one of these paths you say, Pada Sevanam might be different from Kirtanam or Shravanam. But when you go into the bhava, that is why the most important component of any spiritual activity is shraddha, earnestness. Take any of these paths and constantly asking, am I doing it the right way? Am I doing it the right way? What is kirtanam supposed to do to me? Okay, go to the next level. What is it supposed to do? What more is it supposed to do to me? I think that constant mananam which you keep doing, that is what will take you to what Swami says is the bhavadvaita, which any path can lead you to the ultimate. So it is, keep this unity in the back of your mind, but operate in the world of duality. I think that is what is to be kept in mind.
Exactly, because sometimes, we are not able to even have Bhava Advaita,
Right, we don't have it.
And what happens is, even a realized soul, as Swami said, will be seeing the difference in Vishaya. Vishaya Advaita is not possible, so therefore he will treat his disciple in a manner, he will treat a stranger in another manner at a physical level. We have seen that also happening. We have seen how Swami speaks in public versus how Swami speaks when only students are there in the interview room. Because at a Vishaya level it is different. That is public, these are my property. That's why Swami says students are my own property. Otherwise, how can he say that? Because of Vishaya Advaita being impossible, that is why Swami says, these are mine, these are my own students. Otherwise, how is it? But at the Bhava level, it's all the same. So, I feel one important point to take away from this is that we should therefore not get judgmental. I feel only a person who is able to have Bhava Advaita, like Swami, or a realized soul, can make comments, can make criticism, can, compliment and all this. We who do not have that Bhava Advaita, we cannot, bluntly putting it, we should not be judgmental. We can't judge because we really don't have an idea. We, of course, commit the mistakes of being judgmental. But I feel as a guiding principle, we should try not to be judgmental because we do not have the capacity to judge. And so I think one of the important takeaways from Vishaya Advaita versus Bhava Advaita is, unless we are able to reach Bhava Advaita, let's not be judgmental because we never know what is what or who is who.
Right, absolutely. It's the clear difference between a lawyer and a judge. You can know a little bit of law and probably you can argue your case, or even somebody like all of us, we all comment on judgments and we all comment on legal matters. But to be able to give a judgment, you need to be a master of, you should have spent a few years as a lawyer, you've gone into the depth of the different way, different branches of law, and then be able to decide. I think that's the difference. And, coming to what is that which differentiates probably Kirtanam from Smaranam? I'm reminded of, once I was talking to a friend of mine and he was asking, so what is it about Swami coming in dreams? So is it that every dream that Swami comes in is willed by Swami? Or are there dreams where you know, Swami comes without him wanting to come and convey something. So, I mean, I was telling him
without
that...
Without him wanting, meaning by your will you are
Swami
created.
Would say indigestion, you know.
Yeah.
No, that dream is indigestion. I did not mean to give you that message. That sort of a thing. So, what should your response be to when you get a dream? So, I was telling him, Swami says both. You know, Swami says that when I come for giving you a message, the message will be very clear. Other times, you know, your mind kind of throws up images in your dream and one of it happens to be Swami's. So I was telling him that both ways it is actually good. Because in an unconscious state, when you're sleeping, without your own volition, if Swami is coming in your mind, which means it is a hint to you that Swami has been uppermost in your mind.
Either Swami is willing to come to you or Swami is uppermost.
Right, Swami is uppermost. I mean, both ways it is so good. Because, you know, many times we've seen this. We see a movie and go to sleep, or we see a cricket match and go to sleep. We have, you know, reminiscences of that in your dream. Even Tagore says, you know, all that has been dropped in the caravan of life takes shape in your dream, or something like that, he says. So when you involuntarily think of Swami, I think that is a sign that you have thought of him consciously at some point in your time, you know, in the day, and Swami is coming to your thought. I think that is what actually stands for Vishnu Smaranam.
At this point, you know, I just thought, since this topic came up, I was listening and reading to some different scientific evidences on this. Mm-hmm. And from what I could gather, what research has indicated today is that sleep is such a very important part of our life. Some 2 years back, I remember there was a news about a CEO mm-hmm. who was, I forget his name, who was extra fit, who was perfect in his weight, was perfect in everything and doing everything by the book, just that he would sleep only 4 hours a day. And one fine morning or one fine evening, I don't know, it was not so fine because he just dropped dead.
Oh.
A cardiac arrest. He didn't have any cholesterol or obesity or bad habits, no smoking, no drinking, nothing, none of the bad habits, perfect, ideal, fit body, and yet he dies. And finally, what those doctors boiled it down to is they said it's possibly sleep deprivation. So, physically sleep is such an important thing. But brain researchers have found out that something else happens. I'm sure you have heard of that term, sleep over a problem, Prem.
Right.
When you get a problem not getting a solution, they just tell sleep over it. What they say happens is the brain is so intelligent that when you sleep, that is when it is classifying memories. It is classifying and sorting, and archival is going on. All that you have gathered through the day, archival goes on. And that's why sometimes when you work days on end without proper sleep, you don't seem to be getting solutions, because it's a pile of mess there in the brain. And you're not giving the brain time to categorize and sort out. Once it is sorted, it becomes easy to, you know, find solutions for the problem. When you sleep, it sorts out everything. And they say that sometimes when that sorting happens, some of those things are what you remember as dreams. You're constantly dreaming. And even for dreaming, you know, there's an explanation. There are two kinds of sleep. One is called NREM sleep, one is REM sleep.
Right.
The rapid eye movement sleep, you can see it. This is when you're just entering sleep or drifting out of sleep. And the NREM sleep, non-REM sleep, is the deep sleep. The deep sleep is absolute. Eyeballs are still, you'll be lost to the world. So they come in cycles. Apparently you go REM, NREM, REM, NREM, and there's multiple cycles. And then, you know what? They say every REM cycle, rapid eye movement cycle, you get dreams.
Mm-hmm.
It's just that every REM cycle is followed by an NREM cycle, where you're deep sleep, after which that dream is forgotten. So you see, there are some mornings when you get up and remember dreams, and some morning when you get up and you don't remember dreams. It is said that if you happen to get up from NREM,
mm-hmm.
that is directly out of deep sleep, you just get up and you've had a very nice sleep and you say, wow, I'm refreshed. If you happen to break out of NREM sleep,
mm-hmm.
REM sleep, which is rapid eye movement, mm-hmm. which is usually the case, because unless you are disturbed, you wake up like that. Possibly if you keep an alarm, there's a chance that you get up directly from NREM sleep.
Mm-hmm.
But if you naturally wake up, you're supposed to drift back into REM and this. And REM is a dream time. So such times you get up in the morning and you remember, because you have woken out of REM sleep. So there's so much about dreams that we don't remember in the morning. But they say these dreams that you remember is because brain's sorting. Now imagine, as brain is sorting the things, those things throw up in your dreams. And as you said, if that is Swami, which means that the brain has sifted and sorted through a lot of Swami stuff, which is good news, which means you have spent a good part of your day in Swami. So like you rightly said, whether it is Swami's dream out of Swami's volition where he's giving a message, or if it is what we call in quotes as indigestion dream, either way, it is good. It's a win-win situation.
Right, and I think that is what makes Namasmarana or Vishnu Smarana stand out, because that it is almost a path which you can give no excuses for. You know, you can do it anywhere, anytime. And it is supposed to be meant to be done, Laird, because, you know, in a way, going by the gross definitions of what we have given in the previous two parts, you know, Shravanam is when you listen, and we said there are three types of listening, where you just happen to listen, then you go to listen,
passive, active,
right,
focused,
and then you want to focusly listen. Similarly, Kirtanam is also that, you know, when probably you want to indulge in that singing, or sometimes when you're in a group, you know, you don't want to be the odd one out, so you sing along. I think a lot of people actually even have experiences like that. I think one of the devotees was sharing with us.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he was not so interested in bhajans, he was not so interested in Swami, but it so happened that one Akhanda Bhajan was held in his house, so he had no other choice but to sing
along.
And it so happened that for a few hours in the night, he was the only person in the bhajan. So he ended up doing so much of Kirtanam, you know. So there are options of you doing these things.
You reminded me, Prem. In fact, that is the reason why we have come out with that product called Sing Along. You know, there's beautiful darshan and there's a beautiful bhajan going on. The hope is that the audio visual are so compelling and beautiful that even if you're not in a mood to do Kirtanam, you end up doing Kirtanam. And coincidentally, the name of that product too is Sing Along. We have 4 volumes of that in the Sai Blossom store, and I'm sure those who have not seen it would definitely benefit by having a look at that.
Right. And of course, even before the Sing Along came, I remember doing bhajans like that at home. You know, one cassette which had 12 bhajans. I don't know how many times it was played over, because every week bhajans was only that cassette.
Correct.
Coming back to this one. So I think when Shravanam and Kirtanam is involved physically, you know, Kirtanam is also one of the definitions we gave was you hear about the glories of the Lord and now you want to share. You want to be the one who gives, one who shares.
Mm.
So that is one of the expressions of Kirtanam. But when you come to Namasmaranam, it is a stage where, you know, you don't need input from outside. You don't need to listen to think of God. And you don't have that strong desire to go and share about, you know, I am doing this. You know, when we do bhajans, when we do Nangasan Kirtan, it's almost like, I am also benefiting, let me benefit others also. But this Namasmarana is, even when a state where there is nobody to benefit around, I will still do it because, you know, it gives me pleasure.
This is very important, because I remember being a person who would often verbally and keep sharing experiences. Somebody asked, "Where don't you think that experiences are personal and you should not keep parading them to the world?" When I was thinking about that, I came across that incident of Ramanujacharya, who is given the mantra in secrecy and told, "This will give you the salvation, but don't share it with anyone." He immediately climbs the top of the hill and shouts out the mantra, and right, then his guru is upset and says, "What is this you did?" He says, "If it's going to help salvation of so many others, I don't mind going to hell myself, okay, because I feel that my salvation lies in the salvation of others." Okay, so what I feel in the clarification that you're given now is, it's very important. It's good if, you know, you're doing Kirtanam because along with you, others are also benefiting, others are getting thrilled, and others are getting in touch with God. But there is this danger, because we have our mind, we have our ego, there is this danger that my Kirtanam finally will begin to depend on whether others are able to get
anybody
in touch with
to
God.
Listen, right?
Because if, grossly putting, if there's somebody to listen, but in a, even if you want to put it in a noble mould, it is like if somebody is benefiting and able to feel in touch with God, then I will do. So then what happens is the focus is totally lost from myself. It's no longer my sadhana. It's almost like I'm becoming like a tape recorder possibly, because I shall play only if there's somebody to listen and benefit from. So there is that danger that can possibly arise from kirtanam. But that danger is somewhat more or less mitigated in smaranam, because smaranam sometimes can happen in absolute secrecy. And that is why, you know, here I was saying that we have to be careful that we are not judgmental, because some people appear very devoted. And you know what, if we check out the profiles of all these kind of people who appear devoted to us, they are the ones possibly who are leading our bhajans, who are speaking a lot about Swami, who conduct the study circle classes, or who seem to be in the forefront of seva or organizing. Basically, some kind of output, exhibition.
Right.
I'm not saying they're doing it as exhibitionism, but when it's being exhibited out, on that basis we are judging. But Namasmarana is something that happens at a very silent level. It would be foolish on our part to think that somebody who is simply sitting is of no use, because we never know. Because Smaranam is like that. And that is why possibly Smaranam is at a little more selfless level compared to Kirtanam. Because sometimes in Smaranam, you get nothing in the worldly sense.
And in many ways, this Namasmarana, I mean, even as we described it about the dreams and things like that, see, we can tend to fool ourselves in the process of Kirtanam, you know, as a bhajan singer or as a speaker. Mm. I speak every day about Swami, I speak every second day about Swami. Mm. We actually don't know whether we really are doing Kirtanam for Kirtanam's sake, or is it that, you know, we've been put in rigmarole.
We're doing Kirtanam for Kirti's sake.
Right, you know, you never know. I mean, okay, probably the ego part can be recognized by the individual, but you don't know if that opportunity will be removed from you. Will you still stick to the essence, which is supposed to be Smaranam? Hmm. Now, I think that is why I spoke about the example of the dream, because that is a state where you have no control over. Like, I remember one of my friends sharing a very different dream with me, you know. We all have this issue of Swami should give directly, Swami should not give through somebody else. Hmm. And it's almost like a personal tiff with Swami that we will take it only if it is given from you. And, you know, I mean, that's the essence of a one-to-one relationship with Swami. We always talk about that. So this boy was telling, he had a dream in which somebody comes to him and says, hey, you know what, Swami materialized this ring and Swami asked me to give this to you. Okay? And he was saying in the dream, he said, I don't want the ring, I will take it only if Swami gives it to me directly. Mm. So when he woke up, he was so happy that he had the dream.
Mm.
He said, see, because this, now I am sure this conviction is really a conviction. You know, when I am awake, if I am going to make the statement, it might be that this is the front I want to put in front of others.
This is how I wish to present myself.
But in a dream where I have nobody to stand in front of and nobody to market myself to, if I am making this decision, that means I am really wanting this. You know, and that is why Smaranam is very important, because I think one of our teachers had told us in the awareness class, if you really want to know who you are that. What you do when you are absolutely sure that you will never be found out.
Hmm.
I think that probably is the essence of Smaranam. When you are able to chant the name of the Lord, whether or not anybody knows, I think that is when you really come to that stage where, you know, where you've differentiated it from Kirtanam to Smaranam.
Absolutely. And Namasmaranam becomes so important in this time and this age especially, because the physical form, the beautiful form of the Lord that all of us got attracted to is physically not with us. It is not with us. And I remember that discourse clip where Swami explained how Namasmarana becomes a substitute when the Lord is physically not there. I think it is best that we listen to that clip and then discuss further on this part. The discourse clip where Bhagwan narrates the story of the Dwapara age when Krishna is weighed. You know, I think I will not go more into that. We will listen to that discourse clip and we will understand why Namasmaranam or Vishnu Smaranam becomes especially important, not only in Kali Yuga, in this time of Kali Yuga when the Lord's physical frame is not with us.
మీకన్నిటికీ తెలుసు,
యు ఆల్ నో దిస్,
సత్యభామ సువాంచితేత
కృష్ణుని స్వాధీనం చేసుకోవాలని చెప్పని అతని తూకం వేసి అతని కొనాలని ప్రయత్నం చేసింది.
సత్యభామ వాంటెడ్ టు పొజెస్ కృష్ణ, కీప్ హిమ్ ఆల్ టు హర్ సెల్ఫ్.
తర్వాత ఒక మంచి ధనమంతా ఉంటుంది అది.
అండ్ సత్యభామ
హేమంతకు అనేటువంటి దినానికి ఇన్ని తులములు అనేటువంటి అభివృద్ధి చేస్తుంది.
అండ్ షీ కెన్ హ్యావ్ గోల్డ్ టు ఎన్ ఎక్స్టెంట్ షీ
వాంట్స్. కాబట్టి బంగారంతో తూకం చేసి నా భర్తను స్వాధీనం చేసుకోవచ్చు అనుకుంది.
అండ్ షీ థాట్ దట్ షీ కెన్ బ్యాలెన్స్, షీ కెన్ వెయి లార్డ్ అండ్ బై హిమ్.
అప్పుడు కృష్ణుని కొనడానికి ప్రయత్నం చేస్తే,
అండ్ వెన్ షీ వాంటెడ్
ఎంత బంగారం వేసినప్పటికీ కృష్ణుడు కదలలేదు.
ఇన్ స్పైట్ ఆఫ్ ఆల్ గోల్డ్ షీ కుడ్ నాట్ బ్యాలెన్స్ హిమ్.
కానీ ఇంకేం చేస్తూ ఉన్నదంతా వేసింది.
ఇన్ ఫ్యాక్ట్ షీ హస్ పుట్ ఆల్
బంగారపు చిక్కడు.
నో, యూ కెనాట్ బై గాడ్.
ధనమునకు చిక్కడు.
నాట్, యూ కెనాట్ బై
గుణమునకు మాత్రమే చిక్కుతాడు.
బట్ యూ కెన్ బై హిమ్ విత్ యువర్ గుణ, ద క్వాలిటీ.
అప్పుడు రుక్మిణి దగ్గరికి పరిగెత్తిపోయింది.
దెన్ సత్యభామ ర్యాన్ టు రుక్మిణి.
ఆ రుక్మిణి తొలచి పూజ చేస్తూ ఉండినది.
వర్షిపింగ్ విత్ తులసి.
ఇంత తులసి తీసుకుని తన చేతులు పట్టుకుని సత్యభామ పిలిచింది కదా అని వచ్చేది.
షీ కలెక్టెడ్ తులసి లీఫ్ అండ్ ఫాలోడ్ సత్యభామ.
ఈ కథ అంతా కూడా నారదుడు చెప్పాడు.
ఆల్ ది స్టోరీస్ నేరేటెడ్ బై నారద.
చెప్పేటప్పటికి, చెల్లి నీవు ఇలాంటి దుర్మార్గానికి నీకు పోవడం చాలా మంచిది కాదు.
సిస్టర్ ఇస్ నాట్ గుడ్ ఫర్ యూ టు ప్రొసీడ్ ఇన్ దిస్ రాంగ్.
భగవంతుడు ధనమునకు చిక్కేటువంటి వాడు కాదు.
యూ కెనాట్ బై గాడ్.
నీ పవిత్రమైన గుణమునకు చిక్కుతాడు అన్నాడు.
అండ్ ఇన్ ఫ్యాక్ట్ యువర్ క్యారెక్టర్ యువర్ డివోషన్ యూ కెన్ హావ్ హిమ్.
అప్పుడు నీవైనా చూడమని చెప్పి కోరింది.
అండ్ దెన్ షీ వాంటెడ్ సంథింగ్ ఇన్ దిస్ మ్యాటర్.
అప్పుడు ఆమె చెప్పింది.
దెన్ షీ సెడ్,
సత్య
సత్య,
రూపానికి నామము నామానికి రూపము రెండింటికి సరైనటువంటి తూకం అన్నది.
ఇన్ ఫ్యాక్ట్ ద నేమ్ అండ్ ఫామ్ వుడ్ మేక్ పర్ఫెక్ట్ బ్యాలెన్స్.
కృష్ణ నీ రూపానికి నీ నామే సరైన తూకము అనింది.
సిస్టర్ కృష్ణ ఫర్ యువర్ ఫామ్ యువర్ నేమ్ ఈక్వల్.
మధ్యలో నారదున్నాడు.
నారద,
అమ్మా కృష్ణుని సాకారంతో ఇస్తున్నాను, నాకు సాకారమైనటువంటి ఒకటి కావాలి.
అండ్ హీ సెడ్ ఐఎమ్ ఆఫరింగ్ కృష్ణ ఇన్ విత్ ఫామ్. ఐ వాంట్ సంథింగ్ దట్ ఫామ్.
నా స్వాధీనంలో ఉన్నాడు ఇప్పుడు.
బికాస్ హీస్ అండర్ మై కంట్రోల్.
నీవు కూడా నువ్వు సాకారమైనటువంటి వస్తువు నాకు ఇచ్చినప్పుడు నేను సాకారమైనటువంటి రూపాన్ని నీకు అందిస్తాను.
ఇఫ్ యూ గివ్ మీ సంథింగ్ విత్ ఫామ్ దెన్ ఐ కెన్ ఆఫర్ కృష్ణ హియర్.
తన దగ్గర ఏం లేదు.
She has nothing.
ఒక తులసి ఉంటుంది.
She has only tulsi leaf.
వేసింది.
He kept it on the pen.
పత్రము,
a leaf.
పుష్పము,
a flower.
ఫలము,
fruit.
తోయము,
water.
భక్తి కలిగిన వారికి వశుడవౌట సత్యమేని.
If it is true, the truth is between you.
తులసి దళమునకు తూగుదుగాక.
You will certainly balance equal to this tulsi leaf.
అది తులసి దళం వేసినప్పటికీ కృష్ణుడు పైకి పోయాడు, తగ్గిపోయింది.
దెన్ వన్ తులసి లీఫ్ ఇస్ కెప్ట్ దేర్ హి హావ్ టు వెయిట్.
అనగా
మీనింగ్,
ప్రేమతో ఇచ్చింది ఆమె.
బికాజ్ షీ ఆఫర్డ్
పత్రము. ఏమిటి మన పత్రము?
వాట్ ఇస్ ఇట్?
దేహమే పత్రము.
హ్యూమన్ బాడీ ఇస్ ది లీఫ్.
పుష్పము, హృదయమే పుష్పము.
హ్యూమన్ హార్ట్.
తోయము,
వాటర్.
ఆనంద భాష్పములే తోయము.
టియర్స్ ఆఫ్ జాయ్.
పత్రమో, పుష్పమో, ఫలమో. ఫలం ఏ ఫలము? మానసిక ఫలము.
ఫ్రూట్. వాట్ ఈస్ ది ఫ్రూట్? ది ఫ్రూట్ ఆఫ్ ది మైండ్.
భక్తి కలిగిన వానికి వశుడవౌట సత్యమేని.
ఇఫ్ ఇట్ ఇస్ ట్రూ దట్ గాడ్ సబ్మిట్స్ టు ఏ డివోటీ.
నీవు ఈ తులసి దళమునకు తూగుదుగా.
యూ విల్ జస్ట్ బ్యాలెన్స్ టు దిస్ తులసి లీఫ్.
పరమ భక్తురాలైనటువంటి రుక్మిణికి వాంఛలను పెంచుకున్నటువంటి సత్యభామకు ఇదే భేదము.
దేర్ లైస్ ది డిఫరెన్స్ బిట్వీన్ సత్యభామ, ద వన్ ఆఫ్ డిజైర్ అండ్ రుక్మిణి విత్ డివోషన్.
తీసుకుని ఆనాటి నుంచి భగవంతుణ్ణి ప్రేమతోనే పూజిస్తుంది.
సిన్స్ దెన్ షీ స్టార్టెడ్ వర్షిపింగ్ గాడ్ విత్ లవ్.
వెల్, దట్ ఈస్ ది ఇన్సిడెంట్ దట్ ఈస్ వెరీ ఫేమస్ యాజ్ ది కృష్ణ తులాభారం, వేర్ సత్యభామ, వన్ ఆఫ్ ది క్వీన్స్ ఆఫ్ కృష్ణ, is very possessive of him and wants to have the Lord only to herself and not to anybody else. So she decides on a ploy where she wants to buy away Krishna after gifting him to a Brahmin. And she picks Narada to be the Brahmin. And she gifts Krishna to Narada and then tries to buy him back. How much ever gold or jewels she puts on a scale, she is not able to balance out Krishna. And Swami narrates how Rukmini comes and with all her heart, with love for Krishna, she plucks a tulsi leaf, places it on top of the pile of, places it on the other pan and it balances out Krishna. As Swami was narrating this, we heard that important statement that Swami made, and that is what I was referring to before playing the discourse clip about why Namasmarana is so important, because Swami very clearly says that the only thing that can match the form of the Lord is the name of the Lord. Nothing else, you know. This is more important, especially for us Sai devotees. I mean, devotees who love this form of the Lord, because of late we have had many, many people, things, whatever, masquerading as the beautiful form of the Lord. As Swami makes it very clear here, nothing can substitute for the form of the Lord. That form of the Lord was specially chosen, that body was chosen and it came in that form. You will never get that form again. Na bhuto na bhavishyati. That's it, full stop. Nothing can replace it. But Swami says there is one thing that can equal it, that can equal the form of the Lord, and that is only the name of the Lord. And since today we are in that situation where we are unable to see that form of the Lord with our physical eyes, it becomes so important that we hold on to the name of the Lord. Namasmarana gains so much more importance.
Absolutely, and we'll speak more about this path and why it is so special, and probably take more insights from Swami's discourses. Of course, there is nothing more than that we have to offer. It's all from Swami's discourses what you learned. But probably before that, we'll take a short break. We'll play out a beautiful bhajan. On the other end of it, we'll continue this discussion.
Satya Sai Smaranam.
Welcome back, dear listeners, and there was a beautiful bhajan which was trying to teach us the value of smaranam, and very, very beautiful bhajan. And you know, really can't describe how really fortunate we are to have, you know, been singing such bhajans with Swami sitting right in front of us, because it reminds me of that discourse which you were pointing out today, one of the early discourses, I think volume 1 of Sathya Sai Speaks, where Swami said, you know, you've always been chanting name, you've been chanting the names of the Lord. Coming in front of you, I've given you a form for it. That's how beautifully Swami puts it. For the name you've been chanting, now I've given you a form.
Form for it. You know, I remember that is the discourse that Bhagwan delivered at Mirtipadu, or I don't know how do you pronounce that place name. It's a small village, and in Tamil Nadu, I guess.
Okay.
It was in 1958, September of 1958, and there Swami says to all the farmers, He starts off by saying, "Today I am really full of joy because I have before me people who are engaged in hardy toil and who sacrifice their personal comforts in order to make others happy." See, it gives us a direct hint as to what makes Swami happy. "What the world needs is work done in this spirit. Every man has divinity embedded in him as well as truth and sweetness." And then, in the end, you know, the entire discourse that Swami has given is about Namasmarana. It's so beautiful. Swami also narrates a story there. We will come to that story in due course of our satsang. And Swami concludes, you know, by saying, "Sai Baba was still today a formless name to you, but now it has become a form. And you can keep that form in your mind. Live always in the presence of that form-filled name." You know, he's telling, now live always in the presence of the form-filled name. Then alone life becomes one continuous worship of the Lord. So, you know, whether Swami's form is there or not, we definitely get to see the form thanks to the photos, thanks to the videos, thanks to so much that is available on Swami. We are really grateful to Swami for that. So because of that, we are able to get the form. Swami just says, now fill that name with that form that you see, and then continue to live in the presence of that form-filled name. We may not get the, we may not have the opportunity of living with the form. There is no need to rue for it, because Swami, in his immense compassion, as early as 1958, more than almost 60 years before, has already given a solution for that. He says, fill the name Sathya Sai with the form and live in the presence of the form-filled name. I think that is what we have to do. That is what Vishnu Smaranam is all about. Which brings me to the question, Prem. The bhajan was Sathya Sai Smaranam. You know, why do you call it Vishnu Smaranam? Why not Sathya Sai Smaranam, or as you said, Brahma Smaranam, or Shiva Smaranam, Jesus Smaranam? Why is it called Vishnu Smaranam? Because when it's first said Vishnu Smaranam, everybody thinks of it as thinking about Lord Vishnu, Narayana, Krishna maybe, or Rama, which are all derivatives of Vishnu. But why is it possibly called Vishnu Smaranam is the question that I think we need to answer today.
Right. You know, it can be clearly understood when we go back to the meaning of the word Vishnu. Hmm. And Swami has spoken so much about why, you know, the meaning of Vishnu, Maheshwara and Brahma, and what does Vishnu stand for, and how Vishnu is represented in the human body. And Swami would say Vishnu is, the meaning of that word Vishnu is the omnipresent one. You know, that one which pervades everything. Which means that it's he's the ultimate one. He's not a deity, he's not a demigod or anything. It is that Lord who pervades everything. He's the ultimate one. Swami would say, what you call Allah. Allah means, I think it translates into the all high. So in one of the discourses, Swami says, what you call Allah, what you call Rama, what you call Vishnu, it's all the same.
The ultimate.
Right. Mm. And that is why when you see the word Vishnu, Vishnu is referring to the omnipresent one, the one who represents all forms of divinity. So it is not like one form, or you know, it is not like sitting and saying Vishnu Sahasranamam, that alone can be considered as Namasmarana. It is any form or any name of the Lord whom you believe is all-pervading.
In other words, Vishnu, the form, thinking about the form of Vishnu as part of Vishnu Smaranam is actually a subset of Vishnu Smaranam.
Right.
Because you can think of Vishnu, you can think of Rama, you can think of Krishna, but it's important that you think of. I'm reminded of a story that Swami would often narrate, a Chinna Katha.
Mm-hmm.
There are many variants of this story, and we can actually pull this story a little more, extend it to get many, many more messages from the story. It is a story of a person who goes to his guru and says that, you know, there is so many things that I wish to achieve in life. Give me a mantra or a secret by which I can achieve all these things. And the guru says that I will give you a mantra because of which when you chant that mantra, you will be summoning a genie, a ghost, you know, a kind of a spirit or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
That genie will fulfill all your wishes. But you have to promise me one thing in return. And what is that? Whenever the genie finishes the work, you must have some other work to give the genie. Never leave the genie idle, because if you leave it idle, the genie will come and gobble you up.
Right.
So the man says, oh, of course, I've got a million dreams, a billion things to achieve and a gazillion tasks to do. So don't worry about keeping the genie busy. Possibly the man is thinking that I can handle not one but two genies if needed. So he's given this genie. And that is when the man goes and he starts assigning tasks to the genie, and he sees that the genie is very, very competent, very capable, at the same time very efficient, does everything fast. In no time, in a few months itself, this person is now a millionaire. He's having all the luxuries. Everything is being taken care of by the genie. But now he's up to a new problem. What is that? The genie now comes and tells, give me some other work. Now the man wonders what work to do. All the tasks that are there to be done, everything has been done. You know, everything has been done. All his desires seem to be getting fulfilled. What to do, you know? Possibly he might say, just go to the neighboring kingdom, conquer the neighboring kingdom. You know, why I just thought of this is Prem, because this is what happens when we don't stop our desires, you know. As our desires grow, we get into dangerous desires, we get into harmful desires. All the things, all the vices creep into us through desires. Isn't that what one of the important shlokas in Bhagavad Gita tells us, that the route through which all the vices enter us is this root called desire. With desire, everything comes. It starts off as harmless desire, ends up burying you.
Exactly. In fact, you know, one of the studies in philosophy, I feel, is like that, of societies, you know. There are two things that can happen to a society which is sustained, self-sustained.
Hmm.
Either, as you said, the desire could be to expand. You know, I've got whatever I need. Now let me grab even what I don't need.
Hmm.
But the other aspect which can happen, you know, in a society which is self-sustained, is to go within. And I think these are two models of not only societies, for individuals too. And if, as you know, I think Mahatma Gandhi's statement, there is no end to greed. There is not enough in the world to satisfy even one man's greed. And that is the extent where if you want self-expansion, there is no end. So that is why after self-sustenance is reached, can you go within and look for more purpose than, you know, material.
Try to expand inward rather than try to expand outward.
I think that's a very good point that you made, because when this ghost is, probably could have been told to, you know, go and do many more things.
So he keeps sending it out to different tasks, and finally he's not able to do anything. He says, oh my God, now what do I do? He says, just take rest then, don't do anything. He says, no, I'm going to gobble you up. Then that is when he realizes the curse that is attached with this, that if you don't give job to it, it's going to gobble you up. He runs to the feet of his master and he says, I made a mistake, I don't want you, take back this ghost. You know, I'll rather do my own hard work, I don't want this ghost. That is when the guru says, no, you don't have to, you know, undo all the good that you've got. What you can do is get the ghost to fix a pole. Fix the pole and tell the ghost to go up and down, up and down, up and down. Continuously till you tell it to stop. Let it keep going up and down. When you have a task at hand, summon the spirit, summon the genie, give it the task. Once it finishes the task, send it back to going up and down that post. The man says, wow, Guruji, it's a terrific idea, and that is how he saved, and that's how he's able to lead a comfortable life. Swami then goes on to say that each one of us has been gifted a genie like this, that is capable of fulfilling all our wishes, and that genie is what we call the mind. And the mind should never be kept idle, because an idle mind is a devil's workshop. An idle mind can kill us. But at the same time, allowing the mind to reach out for unlimited desires is not the way out. Swami often emphasizes to us on ceiling on desires. So it is not as if we have to keep the mind brutally active, fulfilling all desires, growing outwards. We have to grow inwards. Of course, use the mind to fulfill basic needs. After that, it has to be used to grow inwards. And Swami says, the pole that we fix there should be the Lord's name. Use the mind to do the task that has to be done. Once the tasks are done, let it go back to going up and down the name of the Lord, which is nothing but Smaranam. Smaranam. Let the mind be lost in Smaranam. And you know, as you said, Vishnu Smaranam is not about thinking of Vishnu. It doesn't matter if that pole that is fixed there is made of brass or copper or gold or silver or iron, you know, or wood. It doesn't matter. Let the ghost go up and down any pillar. In the same way, it doesn't matter whether it is Rama or Krishna or Buddha or whatever. Let it be any name of the Lord. Let the mind dwell on the name of the Lord continuously. That is why it is called Vishnu Smaranam, because it is Smaranam of Vishnu, where Vishnu is defined as the one who pervades everything. So, the one who pervades everything is, that is just another way of calling God. So, to think of the ultimate in any form and any name we desire, having chosen that name and form, let the mind dwell continuously upon that. I think this is a beautiful message that Swami gives us, and this also teaches us that it's not important which name we take, but it's important that we take a name. It's not important what is the material of the pole. It is important that we have that pole, which is the Lord's name.
In fact, Swami puts it in a very, very beautiful analogy. You know, he says, you know, there is this lady of the house, you know, the mother of the house, or the daughter-in-law of the house. Mm. Swami says she will respect all men in the family equally. You know, the father-in-law, the brother-in-law, or if there is the, you know, the grandfather in the house, or if there's any guest who's a man. Swami says that this woman of the house will have equal respect and regard for everybody, but there will be a special love and respect for the husband. You know, she will never, differentiate between her husband and the others, but that respect which she has for her husband will be different, and it will be very, very subtle and internal.
And not only that, Prem, invariably, whatever the wife does for her husband, she does only for her husband. It is definitely a different thing, because even when we speak, you know, we call the wife or the husband as the other half. Meaning to say that these are just two bodies with a single soul. Nobody else is the other half. Even parent, or even, as you said, even the father is not the other half. Even the son is not the other half for a woman. So, yeah, you were saying... Yeah, you were giving the analogy, so right. I just added on to that.
So that's what Swami says, that that is how your when you take a name and form, when you start meditating and doing smarana on a name and form, you know, that should be your faithfulness to that particular name and form. You know, you can, at the same time, you know, Swami balances out so beautifully. He says that should be the amount of regard that you have for the name and form, like how a Pativrata woman is devoted to her husband, Swami says. At the same time, her devotion to her husband does not result in her giving disrespect to the other men. And Swami says, similarly, a true devotee who is, you know, a devotee of Rama, a devotee of Krishna, a devotee of Jesus, or anybody, will not have any amount of disrespect to any other names. You know, he will constantly remember that the Lord has many names, and all of these are the names of the same Lord, but I prefer this name, I prefer this form.
And I feel, Prem, you know, at this point, it is, again, we have to emphasize on how important it is to be this Pativrata. We should not be like, I don't know what you, I mean the word that comes to mind is little vulgar to be mentioned on radio, on public air, but we should not be like that person seeking multiple partners. You know, you should not go around, we should definitely be loyal to one name and one form. Just like a husband is loyal to the name and form of his wife, there's no other wife, that's wife. You can't have hundreds of wives. Though you can have hundreds of women whom in your life whom you respect, whom you regard, whom you treat well. But there's only one woman who's your wife. In the same way, there's only one man who's your husband. You may have hundreds of other men in your life whom you respect, regard, give love to, revere. But your husband is your husband. I feel, on one hand, the message that we have to take home is what you said, that let us not disregard. We have to respect everybody. At the same time, we should not forget, I feel the more important message is, we better be dedicated, loyal and 100% committed to that one name and form. No compromise in that. No changing your name and form. And I feel, you know, this is something that God appreciates. And God appreciates not because He's possessive, because every name and form is His. But for our own benefit, it makes sense that we hold on to one name and form. I remember one incident that happened, you know, with this regard. It was, I think, 2008, Ashadi Ekadashi time. That time the devotees from Mumbai had put up a drama, as a part of which there were elaborate sets placed not only on in the performance area, but even on the stage, on the dais where Swami was sitting.
Okay.
So I was taking photographs of that program, and I happened to be sitting on the dais behind Swami. And after the program got completed, Swami was very happy. He was descending from the dais. He was going to grant group photographs. So I was waiting there, and you know how they would wheel Swami down the dais. They would turn him opposite and wheel him backwards, on that slope. So when they turned Swami backwards, we came face to face. You know, Swami was looking at me, and he pointed to something behind me. I looked back. There were cutouts of different saints from Maharashtra. There was Gajanan Maharaj, there was Namdev, there was Tukaram, there was Jnaneshwar, you know, all the saints, Maharashtra Eknath, Maharashtra Boso, so many saints. And then Swami asked me, are you sitting with your gurus? And I looked behind and I saw these were all, you know, they are all gigantic figures in this field of spirituality. I was very humbled, and I turned to Swami and said, yes, Swami, I'm sitting with gurus. And Swami gave a smile, and he was being taken down the ramp. I don't know what happened. Suddenly, prema just struck me in my head. It is again all Swami's grace and His inspiration. I kept my camera down on the floor, got up, rushed to Swami before he could reach the performers, before he could start posing for the photograph.
Okay.
I reached him and I said, Swami, I'm sitting with saints, Swami. I told him, I'm sitting with saints. They are not gurus, Swami. You are my only guru. And even as I said this, Swami didn't respond anything, but a small smile came on his face. And in my heart, I just felt that Swami was very happy with my answer.
Okay.
And I also felt very happy that I gave this answer, because that is the truth. Swami, you are my only guru. And that's it. After that, there was group photos and Ashadi. It was a good, every memorable day. And as we know, every year Ashadi comes a few days before Guru Purnima. So a few days later was Guru Purnima. That year, Bhagwan came in a yellow robe, Pitambar. I remember it so vividly. And there was the program scheduled, morning stotrams. After the program, you know, Swami blesses the prasadam for distribution. It was laddus that day. Swami took one laddu and threw it. Just directly, down. From the dais, he threw it. It reached almost to the floor. And the bhajan singer who was seated in the first line there went and picked it up. Swami again called the prasadam distribution boy, told him to sit there, picked up one more laddu and threw it. This time the throw was not, in quote, strong enough. So it landed on the dais itself. And Swami again looked and smiled. So the person sitting by his side went and picked it up. Now as this was happening, I just felt that possibly Swami wanted me to pick it. I just felt, because I think fleetingly our eyes met or something like that. But I was sitting in the third row with my camera. Now, when this boy went on stage and picked it, Swami immediately picked up one more laddu and looked at me clearly and said, you, come. And again threw it, but again threw it just near his feet. So I had to get up and go all the way up the dais to pick up that laddu. And as I picked up the laddu, Swami told me to take Pada Namaskar. And you know, and he smiled. And that is when it struck me that, you know, today is Guru Purnima and my Guru is giving me a special blessing, because, you know, I had not sung anything. There was nothing extraordinary that I had done on that day, and I don't know, I'm really honestly saying nothing special about me, but I just felt this was Swami's way of saying, hey, you told me I'm your Guru, right? On Guru Purnima, I have to give you this. You know, it was like that, and I felt that in a very physical sense, possibly because of the joy that I gave him 3 days back, saying, Swami, you know, whoever it might be, they are sages and saints, I respect them, I have great regard for them, but Swami, you are my Guru. I just felt Swami was so happy with that, and that laddu was his way of showing that he is happy. When I think back at this, I just feel that if I want to make my Swami happy, I have to be extremely loyal to him. And again, let me clarify, it is not because he needs my loyalty, because it is good for me. It is akin to digging wells, you know. If I dig at 10 spots and dig 10 feet, I may not get water. But if I dig 100 feet at one single spot, I am sure to hit water. And the water is the same everywhere. Wherever you dig, you get the same water. The Lord is the same. But the Lord knows that you will benefit by digging loyally in one spot, digging deep enough. And that is why Swami encourages like this. And therefore, I feel it is very important that when we take up Namasmarana, we don't shift. We don't change the name like we change cars, or like we change phones, or like how we change our clothes. Because we have people doing it at all the levels. We change cars less often, phones more often, and clothes on a daily basis. We seem to change our gods also on a daily basis. I feel that should not happen. We should stick to the same form, same name, without changing for lifetimes. Forget lifetimes, at least for this life.
So it's a very, very important point. Well, and even as you're saying it, you know, there is a subtle reason why it has to be done, or not exactly a reason, the subtle means by which it has to be done. And reminded of that, other Chinnakatha Swami would often say, because the details might be different from what Swami narrates, but, you know, graphically what Swami would say is, there is this devotee of the Lord who's, you know, worshipping Lord Shiva. He has an idol of Lord Shiva. He does puja to it every morning, you know, offers Naivedyam and all of that. And he has a problem which he's praying for and doesn't get solved. So somebody comes by and says, you know what, Lord Shiva is actually very detached, and, you know, he doesn't answer prayers. You should worship the mother form, you know. That is where your prayers get answered and your problems get solved. So somebody gives him a statue of probably Mother Durga or somebody, and, you know, he keeps it and starts worshipping. And Swami says that one day when he's doing the, you know, showing the Agarbati, you know, we all know that Agarbati smoke, incense stick smokes always rises up. So what this man has done, he's taken the statue of Lord Shiva and he says, you know, Lord Shiva does not respond to my prayers, why should I worship him? So he kind of, you know, puts him on a rack or a storage cupboard which is right on top of the puja room. And then he realizes this incense stick smoke, it goes upwards and goes into that particular place where he has kept this
Shiva idol.
And he says, you know what, I am offering the puja to Devi and you did not answer my prayers, but you want the scent which comes out of this Agarbati. So he takes a cloth and he ties the, you know, the face of that idol so that
Shiva doesn't get the scent.
And Swami goes on to say, apparently at that moment he hears the voice of Lord Shiva, and, you know, it's kind of a response to his prayers. And what Lord Shiva says is, you know, at least now you realize that I have life. You know, it's a very funny story which Swami says, but I think that is where the essence lies. You will not shift to your loyalty if you really have faith in the name and form that you have taken. You know, when we say that I should have loyalty towards Swami, your idea of shifting loyalty will come only when your faith in that name and form is not absolutely certain. And we are talking about Namasmarana, we are talking about Vishnu Smarana. We will have to mention, though we have kind of forgotten in our script which we have written here, we have to mention that devotee whom Swami says is the example for this path, and that is Prahallada. And why Prahallada probably stands as an example for Vishnu Smarana is this: it is not just that he took the Lord's name every moment, but it was that faith in that name. Because, you know, he could stand against this tyrant who was his father and who was, you know, going about executing everybody who was taking the name of the Lord. And he stood in front of him and said, no, this is the reality. You know, this is the most important thing anybody of us has to do. We have to keep chanting the Lord's name. And he had the guts and he had the, you know, tenacity to stand in front of his father every time and say, no, Vishnu is the greatest, I will keep worshipping him. And I think that is the essence of Namasmarana. That is why Prahlada is, you know, held out as an example too.
You know, on a lighter note, speaking of loyalty to the name, we had been to the Himalayas.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, in Himalayas, it's fully a Shiva-dominated region. All the temples are Shiva, except for Badrinath, where it is Lord Vishnu. And you go to each of the places, again, it's not the same Shiva. It's okay. Different forms of Shiva. You have Kedar Baba. Kedar Baba is Shiva. That is Shiva at Kedarnath. So, you go, there's the Gangotri. There, you know, Ganga Mata is supreme. Ganga Maya. Everybody speaks of Ganga Maya. In Yamunotri, Yamuna is supreme. Yamuna, Mother Yamuna. So, every place has its own deity. And I remember when we had gone, we headed to all these Char Dham. They are called the Char Dham, Gangotri, Yamunotri, Kedarnath and Badrinath. And and all of them, you have to go towards them from Haridwar. That's why it's called Haridwar. It's like the Dwar means entrance. It's the entrance towards goodness.
Right.
From there you have to go to four different peaks. So that is the common nodal point from which you set out. So as we are going to each of them, chanting and the Kirtanam and Smaranam in the bus, you know, changes according to the deity we are going to, you know. It is Kedar Baba ki Jai and Jai Badri Vishal, you know, if you are going to Badrinath and all this was happening, you know. And you know, I remember sitting with one of our other brothers in the side and saying that, come on here, what is this? Every different place we go, we are changing the name. We should chant just Swami's name because it is the same. This was going on. And he was also saying that, you know, this is not loyalty. This is not about shifting loyalty. Everyone in this bus, trust me, he was saying, is fiercely loyal to Swami. It's just that it's nice, you know, we're going here for variety, he's saying. I actually got a chance to see this, you know, see this happening. What happened was, we got stuck on one cliff,
mm-hmm.
and the road was very narrow, and opposite to us came another bus. Now, both the buses, there was no other way to go. They looked out for one spot in the road where the road was a little bit narrow, a little bit wider. So they thought this is a perfect spot where the two buses should pass. So one of the buses backed up till that point, the other bus came in front, and then, you know, the other bus that was on the road was on the side where there's a mountain.
Mm-hmm.
Means if it goes little to the side, the boulder on the mountain will crash into the glass.
Okay.
We were on that side of the road where we go little this side, we are down in the gorge. We become one with Mother Ganga, okay, mm-hmm. at the bottom. So then slowly, you know, the chanting was going on. Jai Badri Vishal, Jai Badri. All this chanting was going on in the bus. And the buses were slowly, you know, at something like 1 kilometer an hour, trying to cross. Suddenly there was a small slip. And one of the wheels, you know, slightly moved off the road. And there was mud that came out. Suddenly that fear came that, you know, we're going to crash down. In an instant, you know, everybody in the bus, Sai Ram, Sai Ram, Sai Ram. They are shouting Swami's name, you know, they all just gave up all the other names and everything that they were doing. Because you know what, it was almost like, yeah, when we are fine, when we are cool, when we are comfortable, yeah, different names we'll take. But you know, when we are in deep trouble, forget everything, it's only Sai Ram, Sai Ram. And yeah, of course, the buses navigated, we are all safe, we are all fine, it was not a big deal actually. But still, after that we were discussing, see, that inherent loyalty is very much there because, yeah, just for fashion or just for joy, we may chant other names, but when it comes down to placing your life at stake, our entire faith is in Sai Ram and Swami.
I think it's quite understandable because, you know, when we spoke about Kirtanam, we can't speak of Kirtanam without speaking about bhajans and what Swami is instructed when we speak about bhajan singing. And when we speak about bhajan singing, Swami always would say this, you know, sing all deities. Swami would insist that there should be a Rama bhajan, there should be a Krishna bhajan, there should be a Shiva bhajan, there should be a Sarvadharma bhajan, you know, there should be a variety of these bhajans, and especially if there are some, you know, devotees from a particular state which is predominantly devotees of Krishna, Swami would insist more Krishna bhajans. So in many ways, Kirtanam is done for the group. You know, that's coming back to the description which we started with in the program with. When you do Kirtanam, you are forced to think of the people around. You know, when you said about that bus journey, you were forced to think about, you know, what is the significance of the place I'm in, what is the significance of the people I'm traveling with, and you kind of cater to their needs too when you're doing bhajans or kirtanam. But when you come to smaranam, you know, when there is nobody around you, or when you're in a situation where you're going to call out the most, you know, if there is one name I can hold on to, there are a million, but I can hold on to one. When pushed into a stress situation like that, you hold on to one name. And Vishnu Smaranam is about, you know, doing Smaranam of that name. And for many of us, you know, I could be singing Guru Nanak Ki Jai Jaikar, but I'll be thinking of Swami only. And I think that's what matters.
That is precisely what I was about to say now, because when we do bhajans, we sing all other different deities, but you know what, most of the time, during bhajans, when I shut my eyes and think, when it's Guru Nanak Ji Ki Jai Jaikar, actually, I'm not transported to the Golden Temple in Amritsar and all that.
Absolutely right.
Though, you know, many times when songs are introduced, they said, now let us go to the Golden Temple in Amritsar, where the Guru Bani is being sung. All that is fine, and the song also sings about that. But when I'm hearing it, in my mind's eye, what I'm seeing is a beautiful form of Swami sitting and putting talam for that same bhajan. Whether it's Guru Nanak Ji Ki Jai Jaikar, whether it's Allah Allah Karo Pukar, or whether it's Jai Sai Ram, or whether it's Satya Sai Smaranam, my thought is just Swami. And I feel that is what Smaranam, Namasmaranam is about. It's not that we are against, but our love for that name and form is such that whichever name or form you praise, I start thinking about my Swami. In fact, the other day, Prem, I remember I was discussing with you only. There are some of these movie songs that are, especially, you know, Hindi, Bollywood movie songs, which are very romantic songs. But because I have not seen those many movies, I don't know what's the picturization or visualization. When I hear the song, the tune is beautiful, and the words are so beautiful, and the words are beautiful for me because, you know, there's one song which says, Tu jahan, main wahan, sang sang yu rahu teri, chahe zami ho ya asma, whether it's the earth or sky, it's my desire that I just be with you. Wherever you are, I want to be with you. For me, you know, it all just comes as a song that I'm singing to Swami. It is only when I later on, you know, if my fate is bad, I happen to get to see the picturization of that, and then that song is ruined for me, you know, because the movie is seen and then I realize it's a romantic song. But otherwise, many such romantic songs, for me, it feels like a beautiful way to connect with my Swami. If I've not seen that movie, it's a beautiful way because there's no polluting thoughts coming in. It just connects me intensely with Swami. And I feel once we reach a level, once we reach that level of love, then not only movie songs, anything. You sing about Vithala, I will remember my Lord. You sing about Jesus, I'll remember my Lord. I feel that is what we should strive to reach when we say Namasmarana.
And probably this is a good concluding thought we can get, because, you know, when you speak about listening to any song or listening to any kind of, you know, any other stimulant, and you're able to think of God. You know, when we speak about Shravanam and Kirtanam, it is like what Swami would beautifully describe as the fencing around the sapling. You know, there is a point where the sapling needs fencing from animals which can destroy it. And when you talk about Shravanam and Kirtanam, it is like this, you know, you're dedicating certain times of your day for the thinking of the Lord, you know, for thoughts of the Lord, singing of the Lord. It is because, you know, what you sow is what you reap. You know, when you have, when you sit and probably watch 3 movies a day, or, you know, sit and see TV serials the entire day, you are actually sowing those thoughts, because that's what we spoke about when we spoke of Shravanam. It is the food which enters your system through all your senses. We define that as Shravanam. And that's precisely what we do when you're talking about the sapling and putting a fence around it. You are weeding out those things which can create other kinds of thoughts in you. But when we talk about, you know, Vishnu Smaranam, when you cross the stage of Shravanam and Kirtanam, Vishnu Smaranam is that stage probably where, you know, Swami would say the sapling has become a tree, where those very entities which could have caused problem for, you know, this tree, now come and take refuge under the tree. Similarly, those very songs which probably we would have heard when we were saplings, you know, would have distorted our thinking, now I can listen to that same song and it becomes a, you know, fuel to think of Swami. And okay. I think that is what describes this stage where you come to Vishnu Smaranam, where, you know, you have kind of outlived that disciplining phase to an extent.
You know, in conclusion, Prem, just one little thing that happened today morning. It's so beautiful. We were talking about these levels. So, we often, as you said, once we go deeper and deeper into Namasmarana, into loving the name and form of the Lord, everything seems to reflect His glory. And, you know, as you said, even movie songs become like ways to express our love for Swami.
Right.
But there is this danger again, you know, saying that I listen to movie songs because I will think of Swami. It becomes very tough, you know, to distinguish or draw the line between the mind camouflaging its desires for this at the same time versus we really feeling God. In fact, possibly we will take up this Vishnu Smaranam next week also. There we will talk about the story of Ajamila. Ajamila is a case of a Brahmin boy who was born with all the positive virtues possible. But then how the distractions of the mind, how the justification of the mind and how the mind looks at carnal desires and tries to paint them as divine desires can bring you down to great ruin. You know, that we shall see next week. So we have to be very, very careful when we start off on this time of Namasmarana, and when we start off itself, let's not look for shortcuts. Why listen to movie songs or why listen to such songs which have been composed with different intentions? Like as you said, once you become a tree, even the animals that are supposed to harm the tree will take shelter under the tree. In the same way, once you reach that level, even any kind of lyrics written with any intentions becomes vehicles for our love for Swami. But till that happens, why not stick to the bhajans and kirtans which have been composed purely with this intent? I was actually thinking that this is possibly a message we should broadcast on our satsang, because a lot of youth listen, and the youth might actually think of this as a license to listen to movie songs as long as I'm doing it with the intention of thinking about Swami. That is true, but anytime the intention may get lost. Even as I was thinking that, you know, I have subscribed to this daily message service.
Mm-hmm.
It's not from Radio Sai. It is just some private group which sends SMS, WhatsApp like that. Look at this coincidence. Even as that thought came, the message that arrived was, do not indulge in Namasmarana as a pastime or a fashion or a passing phase or as an unpleasant part of an imposed timetable. You know, you definitely have to enjoy Namasmarana. It can't be a fashion. It can't, you know, you can't club it along with something else and call it Namasmarana. You can't justify just the fact that you took up the name of the Lord, whatever, irrespective of whatever activity you are doing, you can't call that as Namasmarana. That's at a higher level. To begin with, possibly, as we have begun our satsang on Namasmarana today, to begin with, for Namasmarana, we have to give it its due diligence. Just like a cricket player, once he becomes a master, he can decide which stroke to play on the spur. But till he becomes that, there is a lot, hours and hours of practice that has gone into that. So, till we reach that level, I think we need to put in effort and cultivate purposeful Namasmarana and dedicated Namasmarana till we reach a stage where our every moment becomes a living Namasmarana.
Absolutely. I mean, it's simply like when you have a huge forest fire, you know, few pieces of plastic thrown into it is going to matter nothing at all. It's going to engulf it and, you know, eat it up like any other tree it's going to eat up. But if you want to build a fire only with plastic, you're going to end up with a mess.
Correct.
You know, you're going to have pollution around. And I think that's the whole...
That's a super analogy.
Right. I mean, that purposefulness is so very important, you know, when you... That is why you can never remove Kirtanam and Shravanam from the equation, even if you have reached the state of Vishnu Smaranam, because we spoke about Shravanam as that focused listening as the highest, and Kirtanam as, you know, willfully setting aside time and saying that this is very important for me and doing it. I think those two are very, very important and really form an important part of Vishnu Smaranam too. And we will see that, as you said, in the next satsang, dear listeners. We're going to continue this, because after all, if Swami has given so much importance, I think it at least warrants 1.5 hours more in our discussion. So we will continue this topic next week.
Which means, dear listeners, you have this opportunity to be part of our afternoon satsang, contribute your shares, your thoughts, your ideas, your feelings, your feedback, your experience are definitely welcome, because this is a satsang where we just share, and the only difference between you and us is you have got the speaker end, we have got the mic end here. So though you don't have the mic end, do share by writing in to us at listener@radiosci.org, and as much as possible we will share it on the next afternoon satsang, so that this becomes a true satsang of global proportions. With that, we offer this effort of ours at the lotus feet of our beloved Bhagwan and pray to him that his name and his form be forever embedded in our heart and guide us on in our life. We will conclude with this song, the other side of which you will be greeted by Brother Chandu with his segment, Love to Love.
Thank you.